It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Hour number 2 here on WEEI on this Sunday, excuse me, just after 9 o'clock here on December the 29th, 2024. Dan Ball with you. Thanks so much for being with us here on this Sunday morning. Bruins, a 4-0 victor. We'll get to that in just a moment. But first, Luke is in Dorchester on the Patriots. Good morning, Luke. Going once, going twice, and Luke is gone. He had Patriots thoughts. According to David back behind the glass, he had plenty of thoughts, but not enough to join us. I'll share a text instead. From the 413, anyone who is a holdover from the Belichick regime needs to go. Wolf, Grow, all the scouts, etc. And if the super cheap crafts don't spend at least 80% of their cap money to improve the roster, they will be a 5-win team next season at best. Yeah, there's a lot of credence to that point. Again, you can join the conversation at 617-779-7937. Bruins finish the month of December 6-0 at TD Garden, and they do so with a convincing victory, 4-0 over the Columbus Blue Jackets. Thank goodness they did, because the effort that they put forth in Columbus was concerning, to say the least. They got their doors blown off, and it was just... it was ugly from start to finish. It was 6-2. That was the final. But there was so much regression over a 60-minute span in that game. This was just after 40. Some of the thoughts that were floating around on social media. The Bruins are still on holiday. Special teams are a mess. Hard to blame Corpusalo for this. And how are the line changes so bad? Line changes, if that's what's becoming evident in a game, there's something that's significantly wrong, and that's purely an effort observation that I saw floating around on Twitter. But yesterday was nothing but that. Some thoughts from WEEI's Bridget Prue. Mason Lorai, an assist and a +4 game for him. Morgan Geeky, a goal and an assist for 2 points. Over his last 10 games, 6 goals, 4 assists for 10 points for Morgan Geeky, who joined the top 6 and kind of the makeshift lines that Joe Sacco has put together, and they've actually found some pretty decent chemistry in this top six, with Geeky on one wing in the top six, and then Charlie Coyle joining in the top six on the wing as well, finally moving out from that third line center role. Now, granted, he's a very good third line center, but when you're as thin on the wings as the Bruins are, you got to do something to try to juice the stats, and that's what happened. Shutout for Jeremy Swayman, which was refreshing. No points for Brad Marchand, so his 11-game point streak came to an end. But a debut for Fabian Lysell. Changes to the Bruins lines: Oliver Wahlstrom, John Beecher out, Mark McLaughlin, and Fabian Lysell in. Lysell, for those that are not familiar with him, was the Bruins' first-round draft pick, 21st overall in 2021, 21 years old, from Sweden, and played professionally since the 22-23 season. hadn't cracked the lineup for the Bruins, and it was one of the bigger surprises from camp for me that Lysell did not make this roster. Because last year as a 20-year-old in the AHL with Providence, 15 goals, 35 assists, 50 points in 56 games, coming off of a year, his first year as a pro, where he had 37 and 54. Those are not insignificant numbers for Fabian Lysell. But he was not only cut during camp, he was one of the first cuts. Like, he was sent back to Providence early. And at least from what you can glean from the reporting from those who were there watching it, it wasn't a skill issue, it was an effort issue. It was a what-are-you-doing-away-from-the-puck issue for this player. Because numerically speaking, there's no question that there's talent. 62 points in 53 games for the Vancouver Giants after his draft year. He was over a point per game with Frölunda as a 20-year-old just after COVID. I mean, the offensive talent was never the question, but it was an effort thing. And it's something specific to young players. When you get called up, unless you're a can't-miss Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon-type prospect, if you're in the Fabian Lysell world where you played a couple years in the minors, you're a low-level first-round pick, there's talent there, but you're not dominating, you're not lighting the world on fire at the highest level before the NHL, you're going to have to play in the middle six, if not the bottom six. And as part of being a winger in the middle six and the bottom six for an NHL team, you got to back check. You may have to penalty kill. You have to be strong in your own defensive end. You can't just hang above the tops of the circles or hang at the blue line and play offense only. You have to be able to defend in the NHL as a young player if you're going to make the team and you're going to stick. And right on display yesterday was an example that it seems like those lessons from the Bruins are getting through. The first spin for Lysell with Justin Brazeau on that third line, he makes a really, really nice play. He was essentially shot out of a cannon on that shift, but he was all over the Blue Jackets on the forecheck, ends up helping jar the puck loose. And it leads to a shot from the point and a goal for Brazeau on the rebound. So automatically, the play around the puck and away from the puck, the positioning, the compete in the offensive end was on display. That's certainly a positive thing. Now, there were some mistakes. There were some turnovers. There were some blown coverages. It wasn't going to be perfect. And I think it was a mistake to expect it was perfect, especially when you think about the context of why this guy was only making his NHL debut yesterday, because there were questions about effort and defense and defensive positioning and physicality and the different things that you need to be successful as a winger in the NHL and specifically with the Bruins. It was wrong to expect him to be perfect, and he wasn't, but he was competitive. He was productive. He helped lead to a goal right off the bat, and I think there were flashes of the skill that is present for this player. And the Bruins are in no position. I said this when Oliver Wahlstrom was claimed by the Islanders, and I know that he was the odd man out on that third line in order to give Lysell the chance to play. The Bruins are in no position to say no to scoring depth right now. So this is a welcome sight, and I hope that this isn't the only recalling that the Bruins will be doing soon, because Matt Patra continues to play well down in Providence. And that's another young player. Second round pick in 2022 is Patra. He's still only 20 years old. So again, take it with a grain of salt. He's now up to 8 goals, 10 assists for 18 points in 19 games. He's played in 14 games for the Bruins this year, a goal and 3 assists for 4 points. So I understand that they're allowing him to develop a little bit more, because he ended up playing 33 games. He's now playing in the AHL for the first time after playing 33 games in the NHL last year and getting hurt. So you let him find his game, you let him get his feet wet. But I mean, he's a point per game player already in the AHL. He's been scoring consistently. He went on like a 7-game goal streak or something like that in recent weeks. So he's starting to find his form. I'm hoping maybe say in the next, I don't know, we're at the end of December now. Give him another month. Maybe either if there's an injury, you call him up or give him another month to fully develop, get into February, and maybe you add him then. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and I know the exact right thing for his development. But in the early going, the first 19 games as an AHLer, Matt Patra is showing that he is ready for the next step after the AHL, because already at 20 years old, he's dominating that competition from a points perspective. So Bruins pick up the win, 4-0 at home, 6-0 at TD Garden in the month of December, and now 20-14-4 on the season. So they got to six games above 500, then lost to Columbus on the road, then won again. So they're back up to six games over 500 right now on the season. And all of a sudden, the different elements of their game that just seem to not click at the right time are starting to click, where Jeremy Swayman is starting to look like Jeremy Swayman again. Is he a Vezina candidate right now? No. But it's definitely been an easier watch for Swayman recently. I mean, in looking at recent games going backwards, obviously the shutout against Columbus, one goal against and a win against Washington. He went to overtime against Edmonton, gave up three, made 26 saves, 3 in 23 saves against Calgary, one goal against and 20 saves and a win against Vancouver. Other than that Winnipeg loss, he's been very, very good. By my quick counting as I'm looking, he is 7-1-1 in his last nine games for the Bruins. And goals against numbers 3-2-3-8-1-3-3-1-0. So Columbus is not a great team. There's not a ton that you can glean from it. I certainly do agree that there is a rebounding concern with Jeremy Swayman kicking out rebounds too much and giving teams second chances and putting his defense in bad spots with specifically where he's leaving a rebound. Because if you're able to control a rebound and you just kick it out to the sideboards, then give up all the rebounds you want. But when you're leaving rebounds loose in front of the slot, when you're giving guys second and third opportunities, no defense in the league is going to be able to keep up with that. So that's something to watch, but it's getting better. It's getting better. There's more flashes of the player who the Bruins invested in recently than there certainly were at the beginning of the season. And don't look now, but Boston's only two points out of the top spot in the Atlantic Division right now. Now, both Florida and Toronto have a game in hand on Boston as they currently stand. Bruins in 38 games, 20-14-4, 44 points. Florida and Toronto both 37 games and 46 points. So still a game in hand, important to note there, but despite all of the chaos, the firing of Jim Montgomery, the inconsistency of Jeremy Swayman after missing camp, the offensive inefficiency and the lack of offensive depth, all of the issues that we were complaining and concerned about, and rightfully so, despite all that to begin the season, you're still two games out of the top spot in the Atlantic Division right now. And you're playing competitive hockey, 6-3-1 in your last 10, 6-0 at TD Garden in December, and a winner against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Bruins have another tough test coming up to end 2024. They're in Washington on Tuesday afternoon, 12:30 puck drop, the afternoon game against the Washington Capitals to wrap up the 2024 calendar year. So another tough test, but the Bruins had their best effort of the season against the Capitals a couple of games ago at TD Garden with a 4-1 victory. So maybe there's just something in the water for the Bruins being able to beat one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. We'll take a break and we return. The Celtics back in action tonight against the Indiana Pacers. By the way, if the Celtics just played the Pacers for 82 games, we wouldn't have any concerns about the entertainment level in the NBA. Those games are on something else, are on some other level, some substance that you can't buy in a drugstore when those two teams play. But the Celtics had quite the convincing effort in their previous game against Indiana. We'll recap in order to preview Celtics and Pacers, plus get you ready for the rest of the slate, week 17 in the NFL. All of that coming up after this break and after David Azar, get you caught up on what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, let's get you caught up with what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Patriots' losing streak continues after falling to the Chargers 40-7 yesterday afternoon. Drake May was able to return to the game after suffering a head injury on the team's opening drive. May threw for 117 yards and one touchdown in the loss. Star cornerback Christian Gonzalez left the game with a head injury and did not return. The Patriots' final game of the season is next Sunday at 1 o'clock versus the Buffalo Bills. The Bruins salvaged the second game in their back-to-back with the Columbus Blue Jackets, earning the victory 4-0 after a tough outing on Friday night. Jeremy Swayman had 19 saves in the shutout. Rookie forward Fabian Lysell was recalled from Providence and made his NHL debut with the Bruins last night. The Celtics are getting set to face the Pacers once again after blowing them out on Friday night. Tip-off for tonight's game from TD Garden is scheduled for 6 p.m. Stay tuned later in the day for Sports USA's coverage of the NFL right here on WEEI. Coverage begins at 1 o'clock with the Panthers and Buccaneers squaring off in an NFC South matchup. I'm David Azer. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Dan Ball after this.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
That was the voice of Drew Carter telling you, Celtics fans, green teamers, that everything's fine. No reason to panic. And, I mean, hard not to agree with that back here on WEEI here on this Sunday. Again, don't forget KJ and Lions taking you beginning at 10 o'clock up until full coverage of the NFL beginning at 1 from Sports USA. Three games coming up on the station later on this afternoon. It was Celtics 142 and Pacers 105 on Friday, teeing up a rematch between those two teams tonight. 6 o'clock tip-off. Coming up at TD Garden. Injury report has three players on it. Kristaps Porzingis and Drew Holiday are both listed as questionable. Anton Watson is out for if you care. But again, I mentioned it before the break. These two teams just kind of forget what defense means when they play. It was Pacers 135 and Celtics 132 in overtime back at the end of October. And then the Celtics coming off of a stretch of three losses over a four-game span, we're looking to rebound and, you know, we're looking to kind of find their form on offense. And I think from an offensive perspective, we talked about it. It's hard to legitimately critique the Boston Celtics based on the fact that you know the skill's there. It's essentially just a matter of can they get themselves healthy and can they shoot the three ball? I loved this stat from WEEI's Justin Turpin. The Celtics are now 8-0 when they record 30 or more assists, and they're 47-4 in the Joe Mazzulla era when they do just that. Friday was pretty basketball from the Boston Celtics, and that is the way that I would describe it, in that everything, and this is also how Joe Mazzulla described it, everything was connected. And when the Celtics are at their best, it truly is a five-man attack on both sides of the basketball where not only can any player beat you on any given play, on any given set, but it almost feels as if they purposefully take turns on who's going to beat you. Like, there is no ego in who's taking the shot. It's legitimately just who is open, ride the hot hand, or whose game best fits the way that the defense is presenting themselves. Mazzulla said after the game, the game is connected and you can't look at it from a static situation of it's this side versus that side. If you're having live ball turnovers, not playing physical on the offensive end, there's that word physical again, by the way, it's going to impact the other end. If you're not doing things at the other end, it's going to impact offense. I thought you saw just a better connectivity between both sides of the ball to where we were able to keep them out of transition and keep them off the free throw line. So you didn't foul, but you still played physically. And you were able to pretty much control every facet of the game. That is about as complete of a response that you could have asked for from this team on Friday against Indiana. And there are certain teams in the league based on the way that they're constructed that just fit the eye of the Boston Celtics. The Orlando Magic are one side of that spectrum where they don't. Where they'll play bully ball, they'll force you into uncomfortable shots, and they will disrupt your passing lanes in a way where you're not able to get into your same offensive flow that you're used to. That's Orlando. Then on the other side, at least from an offensive production perspective, Boston runs Indiana out of the building. It was an entertaining game that led to Indiana winning earlier in the season, but they just put up points, and we saw that in the playoffs last year as well. Indiana just did not have an answer, and they still do not have an answer to stop the Celtics' offense. So they get another crack at them here tonight. Indiana now 15-17, Boston 23-8 on the season. Interesting case study for Indiana on Tyrese Haliburton. And he was the 12th overall pick in 2020. Couple of years with Sacramento, then that major move that gets him to Indiana. And he was taking considerable steps forward to becoming a really, really good player in this league. Back-to-back seasons, averaging over 20 points a game. He's also a hell of a facilitator, averaged 10.9 assists per game. Two straight years with over 10 assists per game for a guy that really, truly is a true point guard and a facilitator for this offense. This year, he's taken a considerable step back. The lowest point per game total since the 21-22 season, his last as a member of the Sacramento Kings. 8.8 assists per game, also his lowest since that last year in Sacramento. The rebounding numbers are down. The field goal percentage is down. Three-point percentage is down. Even his free throw percentage is down. So it's just, it's been a down year, and that's why you see a team that's just good, not great, because Indiana up and down their lineup has good players. That was the reason that they were able to beat the New York Knicks and play the Celtics in the East Final last year, was because of their depth. Because you could go 7, 8, 9, even 10 players deep, and you had guys like TJ McConnell coming off the bench and scoring. And that supplemented Tyrese Haliburton and Pascal Siakam, who you brought in from Toronto. It supplemented them just enough where they could play fast, they could play run and gun, and they had enough depth on their bench where you wouldn't tire out your players from playing that style over a 7-game series, where in the case of at least when they played New York was shorthanded, and they just kind of out-endurance them out of the building and out of that series. What separated Indiana from New York in that series was effort and speed and pace. What separates Indiana from Boston, no matter how good or bad Tyrese Haliburton is playing, is just skill and depth of skill. And that's why Boston is able to dominate these games, because pretty much player to player to player, when you go down Indiana's roster and compare it with Boston's roster, just, you know, 1 through 5 in your starting five, and then say 3 deep on your bench, you just find a better player that's executing that role. Indiana has a good and deep team. Boston is elite at pretty much every position when you compare it to what Indiana has to offer. And when you try to run with the Celtics, you're not going to win that game. If Indiana were to turn around today and win this basketball game, they would have to play a completely different style that they are unaccustomed to, which is use the shot clock to their advantage, drain it down as much as possible, and try to win as low of a scoring game as possible. And that just doesn't fit the eye of this Indiana Pacers team. You look before that, they gave up 120 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. They gave up 113 in a loss to the Hornets, 123 in a win against the Chicago Bulls, 122 in a loss to the Raptors, 136 to the Grizzlies, 130 to the Pistons, 114 to the Trailblazers. They play these high-scoring games. Bet the over when the Indiana Pacers are in town. But as they've started to turn their season around and claw their way back up the Eastern Conference standings, it's been defensive efforts that have done it. In recent games, before this most recent two-game losing streak, 105 to the Warriors, 95 to the Kings, 111 to the Suns, but you scored 120, 104 to the Pelicans, 107 to the 76ers. It's all, essentially, can you keep the other team under 110? And this Pacers group has shown a complete inability to do that when playing against the Boston Celtics. So, should be another fun one, another high-scoring up-and-down matchup tonight at TD Garden as the Celtics look to continue getting back on track and find their form from a shooting perspective at just the right time, because after the new year, you play Toronto on December 31st, should be able to handle that one, but then you go on the road and play Minnesota on the 2nd, Houston on the 3rd, Oklahoma City on the 5th, and Denver on the 7th before coming back home for a stretch of 4 out of 5. That is not the time to be struggling. So getting this two-game stretch against Indiana and then playing Toronto on the 31st, Raptors 7-24. Yeesh. Good Lord. This three-game stretch is crucial to try to tee you up to be as successful as possible against those four teams in the West, any of which, or most of which, I would posit, you could have at least a chance to play if you're able to get back to an NBA final. In the West, the Thunder are 25-5. You have Houston at 21-10. Denver is 17-13, but you know the skill there. Same thing with the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're 16-14, but they're 6-4 in their last 10. They've won two straight. They were on the other side of the Karl Anthony Towns, Julius Randle mega deal at the beginning of the season. You saw the Knicks struggle, but they've started to find their form. They're now at 22-10. And I think you can say the same thing for Minnesota. It may just not be quite as dynamic in Minnesota. They took a really important player out of that mix in Karl Anthony Towns, but they're still a team that can beat you. They have skill. Anthony Edwards is a guy who a lot of people think has the potential to grow into another face of the league as we talk about ratings and interest and what have you. He certainly has the personality to be a face of the NBA, but you also have to match that with elite talent and ideally championships. So all that to say, Indiana is exactly what the doctor ordered for the Boston Celtics. They proved that on Friday. They'll try to prove it again today. Certainly Toronto shouldn't be much of a challenge on New Year's Eve. And then the rubber hits the road after the turn of the calendar into the new year with four very tough games on the road for the Celtics. Some good tests out West in January. We will take a break, and when we return, we'll wrap up this portion of your WEEI Sunday morning. And we'll do that by looking at the rest of the NFL slate here in week number 17, a lot of clinching scenarios floating around, and one team last night that still maintains their spot in the playoff race, clinging to playoff relevancy, and another incredible performance from Joe Burrow. That's the Cincinnati Bengals, where they stack up in the AFC, and the rest of the matchups that will be on your screen and on your dial here on this Sunday in the NFL. We'll talk about all that and more coming up after this.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with.
and Lego bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Caught. Higgins, touchdown, Bengals win, and they are alive in the playoff race.
How about this stat for Joe Burrow, who is single-handedly dragging the Cincinnati Bengals into the playoff fight here in 2024? The list of most consecutive games for a quarterback with 250 or more passing yards and 3 touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Steve Young, all with 5 games in a row doing that. Rodgers did it in 2012 and 2013, Peyton Manning 2012, Steve Young 1998. Then, as is the case with most records for quarterbacks, Tom Brady at 6 did it in 2007. Incredible year. Joe Burrow has 8 straight games with 250 or more passing yards and 3 touchdowns. And the Bengals did everything they could, including that missed field goal in overtime, mind you, which you just heard the call of, did everything they could to try to once again get rid of and blank away another great performance from Joe Burrow. 412 passing yards and 3 touchdowns, and he was sacked 7 times yesterday. But Burrow was too good once again. Bengals win 30-24, and it sets up an incredible week 18 in the AFC. The Kansas City Chiefs, led by Carson Wentz next week, we're assuming, are going to decide the playoff fate of the Denver Broncos, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Miami Dolphins, and or the Indianapolis Colts. The Chiefs are, at this point, 15-1 on the season. They've already locked up home field advantage. Nothing left to play for. They play the Broncos on the road in Denver next weekend. So right now, the playoff picture in the AFC, you have Kansas City. They have the number one seed. Then it is Buffalo, who at 12-3 can pretty much salt away the number two seed with a win. Baltimore at 11-5, and then Houston leading their division at 9-7. You have Pittsburgh at 10-6. They're in. The Los Angeles Chargers, with their dominant performance yesterday, they are also in. Pittsburgh wins the tiebreaker over the Chargers based on head-to-head winning percentage. Then it is Denver at 9-7. Cincinnati at 8-8, and then the Colts and the Dolphins, who are both at 7-8, who are still yet to play, who will play here on Sunday, all fighting for one spot in the AFC. So Denver plays Kansas City next weekend. The Cincinnati Bengals are on the road to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are jockeying for position right now between that 5-6 spot. They in Los Angeles right now tied at 10-6. So Bengals get the Steelers. Colts get the Giants today, so they should win, and then they get the Jaguars. So very good chance that Indianapolis will be able to at least do their part in staying relevant. But Anthony Richardson, once again, dealing with injuries. That may not necessarily even be a bad thing for their playoff chances. It's just the reality at this point. Then you have Miami, who is 7-8. They play the Cleveland Browns today, and they play the Jets next week. So, I mean, both of those teams at 7-8 should at least be able to get to 9-8. The question is going to be, can Denver do the darn thing against Kansas City, and what kind of effort will Kansas City put forth, assuming that they're resting most of their roster next week in that game? So a very fun playoff picture unfolding in the AFC. And in the NFC, you have a very similar situation going on, where Detroit at 13-2, Philly at 12-3. Detroit can essentially call their own shot with wins, because Philly, after going on that incredible winning streak, they lost against the Washington Commanders 36-33.
Tackle the NFL action on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because right now, new customers...
Thank you, Christian. Don't forget that you can tackle the NFL action if you want to bet on any of these games we're talking about. But they lost, so right now, Detroit is in the driver's seat for that number one spot. Philly at 12-3, then you have the Rams, who are at 10-6. They still have not clinched their playoff spot, but they are certainly in the driver's seat right now in that AFC West, or that NFC West. They at 10-6, Seattle at 9-7, and Los Angeles won. They've won 5 in a row, so they're very much in a good spot to lock that up. The Atlanta Falcons at 8-7, currently in the lead by a half game in the always disastrous NFC South. Then you have Minnesota 13-2, tied with the Lions, but the Lions have the head-to-head advantage, so they have the number one seed. Amazing the difference. 13-2, but you win the head-to-head, so it's first versus fifth. Then Green Bay 11-4, and you have the Commanders at 10-5, the Seattle Seahawks at 9-7, Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 8-7. So great, great fights that are unfolding here in the final 2 weeks of the season in the NFL, and nothing is locked up. Right now, you have more of a clear picture, at least at the top, in the AFC, because you know Kansas City is all set, and Buffalo, they get the Patriots next week, but Buffalo this week also in a position to do some damage and lock up another position, just grabbing their schedule real quick before we go to give you the updates on what you can hear, what you can see the rest of this week. Giants and Colts at 1 o'clock. Bills get the Jets and then the Patriots, so they should be able to lock up that number two seed pretty easily. Saints against the Raiders. Then you get the Cowboys against the Eagles. Big one for the Eagles to try to scratch and claw into that number one overall seed, but they're going to need some luck around them. Panthers and the Buccaneers, so a chance for the Bucs to claw their way back up to the top of their division. Browns and Dolphins at 4. Packers and Vikings as well. That's going to be a hell of a game. And then Sunday Night Football, which you'll hear right here on WEEI. That is the Commanders at 10-5 against the 8-7 Falcons. And Monday Night Football, by the way, tomorrow, a game that should have been, and I think you can understand that the schedule makers putting this together, should have been a battle for maybe an NFC number one seed. The Lions at 13-2 taking on the 6-9 San Francisco 49ers, a team that's just been ravaged with injuries. And as much as I understand that people are complaining about the coaching that Kyle Shanahan has brought, he's an incredible coach. I think if for some reason San Francisco decided, yeah, we're done with Kyle Shanahan, he'd have a job before the ink was even dry on his dismissal letter. That would certainly be the case. And there's a lot of teams that would do everything they could and probably trade assets to try to get Kyle Shanahan if they could. But still some very, very fascinating clinching scenarios coming up in the NFL. The next 2 weeks are going to be wild. You can catch the entire slate of the NFL on Westwood One right here on WEEI. We'll have Sunday Night Football tonight beginning at 7:30 with the coverage. And then tomorrow we'll have coverage of Monday Night Football also beginning at 7:30. But we are up against it here, so we will bid you adieu here on this Sunday morning. Don't forget, KJ and Lyons have you from 10 a.m. until 1. They're breaking down the entire slate of the NFL. They're, of course, getting your thoughts on the New England Patriots and Gerard Mayo and Elliot Wolf and Drake May and all of the different elements going on there. So make sure you load up the line for them at 617-779-7937. You can also text in on that number as well. You can tweet the guys. You can get in touch in a number of different ways, but they certainly do want to hear from you as they get you set for the full slate of games here on a Sunday in the NFL. Don't forget, tomorrow is a Patriots Monday, so the guys will be at Gillette Stadium. I can tell you, at least from an afternoon's perspective, Andy Hart and John Lyons will be on site from 2 to 6. They'll talk with Drake May and Jonathan Jones as part of the afternoon program as well. I will be back with you tomorrow night beginning at 6 up until 7:30. Getting you ready for the final game of the Week 17 slate. So thanks so much for being with us here on this Sunday morning. Thank you to David Azier behind the glass as well. Hell of a job from him producing this one here today. KJ and Lyons coming up next. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend and keep it locked right here on WEEI.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego sets play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.